The time is now 6:06. Welcome to WRT's local news for Tuesday, March 26th. I'm your host, Sarah Hopeful.
And I'm your host, Christian Knutson. We're coming to you live from the WORT studios on Bedford Street in beautiful downtown Madison. Wisconsin's election year attention from national candidates is showing no signs of slowing down. Former President Donald Trump announced today that he will visit Green Bay for a campaign rally next Tuesday, the same day as the state's presidential primary. It's the presumptive Republican nominee's first visit to Wisconsin in 2024, but with the state's status as a key battleground in November, it likely won't be his last. Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, a top campaign official for President Joe Biden is in Wisconsin this week to tout the administration's infrastructure investments. Mitch Landrieu was the White House's infrastructure coordinator before becoming Biden's campaign co-chair earlier this year. The Associated Press reports that he will make stops in several cities, including Madison, Milwaukee, and La Crosse. The Biden campaign has been no stranger in Wisconsin recently. Vice President Kamala Harris has already visited the state twice this year, including a stop in Madison earlier this month. And President Biden was in Milwaukee just 2 weeks ago.
Justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court won't overturn a ruling in a dispute between Amazon and state officials. At issue was whether certain Amazon delivery drivers should be considered employees or independent contractors, according to the Associated Press. A lower court sided with the State Department of Workforce Development, designating the company's flex drivers as employees and thus included in the state unemployment insurance program. Amazon appealed the decision, but the high court announced this morning that they were dismissing the case and letting the original ruling stand. That means Amazon could be on the hook for as much as $200,000 in taxes.
Federal education officials have opened an investigation into a UW-Madison scholarship program for minority students. The U.S. Department of Education inquiry follows a complaint from a national anti-affirmative action group named the Equal Protection Project. The group argues the scholarship violates the Constitution because it's not open to white students, Wisconsin Public Radio reports. The Creando Comunidad Scholarship Program is new for this academic year and is available to undergraduates from a, quote, historically underrepresented racial or ethnic group or community, unquote. It provides $500 and a mentorship opportunities. A Department of Education statement said the investigation is neutral and no decision has been reached regarding the merits of the complaint. A UW spokesperson said the university is cooperating in the process.
The Dane County Board is officially nonpartisan, but the County Democratic Party is mobilizing to try to oust the board's lone conservative member in next week's election. Incumbent Jeff Wiegand is facing a challenge from Marshall Village board member Andrea Andrews in the mostly rural 20th district, which includes Marshall, Windsor, and Sun Prairie. In the run-up to the vote next Tuesday, the Dane County Democratic Party is sending volunteers to canvass for Andrews, the Wisconsin State Journal reports. Wiegand, an outspoken conservative, won his last race 2 years ago by just 33 votes. This time around, Democratic organizers say they hope committing more resources to the district will be enough to beat him.
Madison's Plan Commission has once again said no to a plan for a large development on State Street. Members voted this week to deny demolition and use permits for three neighboring buildings on the 400 block of State Street, the Capital Times reports. It's the second time they've blocked a proposal from developer J.D. McCormick to build a six-story apartment building on the site. The Plan Commission originally voted against the project in June 2023, citing concerns about the size, but gave the developer time to make changes. The no vote this week comes after McCormick presented the same plan with no alterations. And those were the headlines. Now on to the rest of today's top stories.
A grassroots campaign is urging Wisconsinites to send a message to President Biden in next Tuesday's primary by voting uninstructed. But what does uninstructed mean? WRT News producer Faye Parks has the details.
The Democratic ballot for next Tuesday's presidential primary will have four options: Joe Biden, Dean Phillips, a write-in option, and another option for an uninstructed delegation. And local politicians and activists are pushing for Wisconsin voters to take advantage of that fourth option, voting uninstructed. Halah Ahmad is spokesperson for Listen to Wisconsin, a grassroots advocacy group that's behind the uninstructed campaign. She says that voting uninstructed is a way to show that candidates, President Biden in particular, need to work harder to earn votes come November.
It basically means that you don't support any candidate that's available, and that you want to support somebody going to the Democratic National Convention who can kind of act in the best interest of the voter, but not necessarily be pledged to vote for a specific candidate, in this case, either Joe Biden or Dean Phillips.
President Biden and Donald Trump are the de facto nominees for the respective parties, having already obtained the necessary delegates. But each political party still includes the uninstructed option on the Wisconsin ballot. Choosing to fill out that bubble next Tuesday means that Wisconsin's delegates would head to the Democratic National Convention this August without being instructed to vote for any specific candidate. Ahmad says that folks who vote uninstructed can communicate to delegates and to President Biden that they are unhappy with his performance over the last 4 years, and especially over his foreign policy and handling of the crisis in Gaza.
We're going to use the democratic process to protest and make our voices heard. And this is about urgent policy change right now that Wisconsinites have a unique opportunity to respond to and make, because our voices in Wisconsin and even just small margins of voters matter so much to the future of the national elections.
This comes on the heels of similar campaigns in other states, also driven by Biden's inability to exert more pressure for a ceasefire in Gaza. More than 100,000 Michiganders voted uncommitted in their February primary, and Minnesota's uncommitted campaign set a goal for 5,000 votes, but their last-minute effort drew in 46,000 Minnesotans earlier this month. Representative Francesca Hong, a Democrat from Madison, is one of 20 elected officials across Wisconsin who signed a letter endorsing the uninstructed campaign on Sunday.
Seeing this movement be multiracial, multi-ethnic, and multi-generational only firms up and confirms for me that it's the right thing to do to make sure that we all do the right thing in November.
Other members of the state assembly also signed on, as well as state senators, alders on Madison's Common Council, supervisors on the Dane County Board, and school board members from multiple districts. And the uninstructed campaign is continually gaining more support. Recently, it received an endorsement from Voces de la Frontera Action, an org that advocates for low-wage workers, immigrants, and youth. Christine Newman Ortiz is the executive director of Voces. She says they signed on because of the solidarity it lends.
The way it connects with us is that there is also a shared sentiment of frustration with President Biden on the issue of immigration.
Newman Ortiz says that Voces has added their own demands.
Calling on Biden to end the 287G program that legalizes racial profiling and deputizes local law enforcement. This was a program that he did promise to eliminate during the campaign and has yet to do so, as well as expanding work permits for new arrivals and immigrants who are essential workers here who've been here for decades, worked through the pandemic, you know, and they're still essentially living in the shadows.
Ahmad says that Listen to Wisconsin is hoping to get 20,000 uninstructed votes next Tuesday. That's roughly the same number of votes that Biden won Wisconsin by in 2020. But when it comes to the general election in November, Ahmad says it's up to each voter to decide if Biden's response is up to snuff.
I don't know how people will move, but what we believe is that this is the short-term method to call for policy change. And based on how things go, I think voters will take really seriously whether they feel heard by electeds.
And Newman Ortiz says that the uninstructed campaign here in Wisconsin and similar campaigns in other states are actually an opportunity for Biden to drum up more support.
Do we want Trump to come to power? No, absolutely not. But this is part of the strategy of making sure that Trump doesn't come to power, which is to put pressure on Biden to use the power he has to send a clear message that he stands with immigrants, that he stands for, you know, peace and justice.
Delegates for the Democratic Party will pick their presidential nominee this August in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention. But without major challengers in either the Republican or Democratic primaries, we're entering what could be the longest redux of 2020 yet. The Biden administration has repeatedly visited Wisconsin in the last few months, touting its policies on labor and the economy. Mitch Landrieu, a Biden campaign co-chair and former infrastructure coordinator for the White House, was in Madison and other Wisconsin cities today. Also today, former President Trump announced he'll visit Green Bay for a campaign rally next Tuesday, the same day as our spring election and primary. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Faye Parks.
Last month's historically unprecedented tornadoes were just the beginning of a new flooding and severe weather season that's on the horizon. And the National Weather Service needs your help. Dane County Emergency Management is hosting a free class on severe weather next Tuesday. Residents of South Central Wisconsin can attend to learn weather spotting and preparedness. WORT feature contributor Greg Michaud spoke to Jay McClellan of Dane County Emergency Management to learn more.
Today we have Jay McClellan, who's with Dane County Emergency Management. Jay, thanks so much for being on the show today. I was excited when you told me about the weather spotting classes because this is an opportunity for people to participate in a class that not only gives them a new skill, but gives them an opportunity to help their friends, their family, and residents throughout South Central Wisconsin. Jay, can you tell me what will participants learn from this class?
One of the intents of the class is to provide attendees an opportunity to learn about what they see in the sky in terms of what's hazardous or what sort of looks scary but may not necessarily be hazardous to them. The important thing is to understand what you're looking at in the sky and what it is that actually is a precursor to and actually is a tornado. It's amazing how many times people will call in, say, a funnel cloud or a scary-looking cloud is a tornado, and that sets off a lot of activity, and a lot of other people start working to verify and validate what's going on when they receive a report like that. The more accurate and the more timely reports we get, the more efficient and effectively people can respond and prepare for deadly weather like that. So it's helpful. People can learn about what's in the sky, more or less what the danger signs are to look for, and as well how they can also contribute that information to help their community and help everybody else around them in terms of safety.
Jay, after you told me about these classes, I started talking about it to some people here in Madison, and a couple of people had the exact same question, and that is, they said, what do the weather spotters provide that modern-day technology, modern-day radar, does not cover?
Ground truth. In short, ground truth. Radars, all that technology still indicates there still is the human ability to look and assess what is actually going on. There is the ability to determine, not just go through some algorithm, that yes, there is debris flying off the ground. That's one of the indicators of a tornado versus a funnel cloud. The other key thing about the National Weather Service's radar, and there is a network of radars all across the country, but in terms of having something right here, well, we don't have that here in Dane County. But in terms of having that ground truth only increases and maximizes the amount of information and detail that the people who issue tornado watches, warnings, and other severe weather warning products have to make better determinations and to provide more accurate advisories and warnings.
It sounds like having weather spotters might actually reduce the number of false warnings, that a weather spotter, by being able to tell the difference between a tornado that's on the ground as opposed to one that's still in the air, can help the radio stations, television stations, and the National Weather Service provide more accurate warnings. Is that correct?
We still need people with eyes on it to be much more accurate. Radar's technology indicates, but what is it that's actually there? A person still needs to provide that assessment. But when you have ground truth, when you have somebody providing maybe a little better detail in terms of what color are the clouds or how big is the hail coming out of the clouds, that kind of information is ground truth that can paint a better picture for the person who is responsible for providing the advisory, watch, and warning information for the public.
Some people who are listening to this broadcast may automatically think, uh-oh, is this something like these videos that we see on YouTube where you see a couple of individuals in a vehicle chasing a tornado across country, putting themselves at risk to gather information? Does the National Weather Service ask participants to take these kind of risks?
No, I have never heard the National Weather Service ask people to do this. The National Weather Service, as far as I'm aware, does not condone people going out and chasing weather, nor does Dane County.
Jay, where will the classes be conducted?
Well, so we have two classes. They will be conducted on Tuesday, April 2nd, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Mount Horeb Public Library. That's 105 Perimeter Road in Mount Horeb. And then in the evening from 6:30 to 8:30 at our new office. We are located in Fitchburg at 2982 Capec Road.
Is there any cost for this class?
No. There are no costs. There are no tests. There are no quizzes. The only expense is your time. Show up, learn something. It is free. You will pass the class if you sit through the whole class because there is no test. Show up, learn something, help improve your knowledge so you can increase your level of safety.
Sounds like a great opportunity, Jay, especially when people can learn that it's here, that it's free, and that there's no prerequisites and there's no signing up, just showing up. It couldn't be simpler.
Well, exactly. And I think the other thing, Greg, I think it's important for people to understand that the warning process is not just looking up at the sky and, oh, there's the funnel cloud and there's debris on the ground, there's the tornado. There's all kinds of observations that are very helpful before anybody ever sees a tornado. So it's not just learning to tell the difference between a funnel cloud and a tornado, but all the other weather, all the other precursors that come up before severe weather. This is not just a tornado spotters class. It's a severe weather spotters class. And things that lead up to what everybody thinks of as the most dangerous thing is a tornado. Actually, the natural hazard that causes the most damage to Dane County and generally Wisconsin and the United States is flooding and severe thunderstorms. So, yes, tornadoes are the thing that people are probably the most scared of. And, yes, you will learn a lot about those. But there's many other types of severe weather that can be dangerous and cause damage. And we also cover a lot of that in these classes.
Will participants learn about what steps they can take to protect themselves and their property from severe storms, floods, and tornadoes?
Yes, that's my section of the class.
Jay, from your experience, is there one or two particularly helpful pointers that you can share that people can take to protect themselves?
Oh, yes. I think one of the key things following any kind of disaster or emergency, and this is generally coming from people who were not involved or affected directly by the disaster, is communication. You're going to want to know if your family member, cousin, girlfriend, close friend is okay following when you see the news flash. I had this personally happen to me with my family, and I was out of town. You want to know if they're okay. How are you going to communicate? How do you share? And that's communication is clearly something that people need to think about and have a plan for. A text. I will send texts, or my family will send me a text if we're involved in something saying they're okay. So that it doesn't just, it's not unexpected. There's a clear expectation. Because if that doesn't arrive, then that could also tell the people who are not affected something needs to be done. And that's what you want. To help improve your level of safety, to make sure you have aid, you have assistance coming to help you, or you are going to help your friends and neighbors and loved ones. The other thing, if you want to be more prepared, is think about and keep things nearby when you're sleeping or wherever. The Stoughton area tornado that struck Dane County in 2005, one of the things that people said they wish they had most when they were in their basement and there was debris and damage outside, shoes. They wish they had their shoes, and they wish they had their wallets.
Those are helpful tips, Jay. Those are things that you just mentioned, some things that we don't normally think about during the excitement of getting that first warning that a tornado's on the horizon or that the floodwaters may be at our doorstep.
Come learn how you can better protect yourselves and better protect your household, your neighbors, your loved ones.
I'm your host, Greg Michaud, and thank you for listening to another edition of Water Stories, where we explore a variety of water topics and related environmental issues.
time is now 6:33, and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. I'm Sarah Hopeful, here with Christian Knutson. Thanks for joining us. 1 week from today, voters will decide who sits on the Dane County Board. District 4 represents Madison's south side, and two candidates are vying for the seats, incumbent supervisor Matt Veldrin and challenger Richard Brown Sr. Earlier this week, Brown shared his priorities with WORT news producer Faye Parks.
Thank you for joining me, Richard.
Yeah, thank you.
So to start, can you tell us a bit about yourself? What is your background and what political experience do you have?
So I served three terms on the Dane County Board, and they must have liked me so much that they hired me as their systems accountant. So after my three terms, I worked for the county as their systems accountant, the financial part of their accounting system. My job was to read the budget, everything, that all the minutes to the county board, and put it on the accounting system. The accounting, the money, and set it up on the accounting system, put my lines together and everything, and stuff like that.
And so when did you serve on the county board, and what were some of the accomplishments you achieved in that seat?
So 2000 to 2006, I chaired Personnel Finance. And so when I was the chairman of Personnel Finance, one of the things I did is I worked on trying to help the African-American community. So all the studies and the things that was done, like in the past 15 years, was the money that I set up for grants and to do studies on the jail. And at one time, they was charging, like, it used to be like almost $10 or $8 to connect from the jail to their loved ones when they was incarcerated. So we knocked all that out and it reduced the cost, so it didn't cost as much for people to stay connected with their family. Also, I did a lot of things that was related to affirmative action and changes. During my term, I think they created a couple positions in the Office of Equity and Inclusion. There was no way we pushed for that to happen.
What inspired you to run for the board again? What are your priorities for District 4?
You know, I coached high school football, I coached youth football, and I coached Southside Raiders, and we had 150 kids. And then when the program was over, the Boys and Girls Club said they only had like 60 slots. So we had like 90 kids that had nothing to do. And so I wanted to fix that. And then actually, the whole while I was on the county board, I could see like all the things that was happening since I had to read the minutes and set up the accounting system. I seen the wasteful spending and different types of things that could have helped our community. So I decided, wow, I would do this, I would do that, I would do this. And then after 10 years of working for the county, I decided that I wanted to make the changes and come back and do the things that I seen while I was working there.
Would you mind walking me through a couple examples of that? What are some changes to spending that you would like to implement?
There's no accountability. So we give money out to different agencies. There's no outcome. So as the systems accountant, I'm an analyst. That was my main thing, to analyze different outcomes. So if we give money for housing, but then we turn around and we still have these housing deficits, and then companies couldn't say, well, we placed these many people, or we put these many people in there. So I wanted numbers. You can't evaluate a system unless you know the starting point and at the end. So that was one of the examples that I would do. I also work a lot with IT, and I would look and see that the county and the city had the same accounting system, which was the Munis system. And so I was very involved in the accounting system. I was thinking, well, maybe we can share some of these services, and instead of having five supervisors, you might only have two. So one of the little things, like, it was a lot of top heaviness that was going on. So I seen things that could change.
So it sounds like you've been involved in criminal justice reform in the past, and this has come up again a lot this year. What is your perspective on things that could change?
Well, we need an inpatient treatment facility. We lock people up and they spend their time in prison or in jail in the county, and they have drug and alcohol problems when they go in, and they have the same problems when they come out. So what I was thinking is maybe we could make that better by having an inpatient treatment mandatory. So you're required to go through drug and alcohol treatment as opposed to sentencing them to sitting in the jail. Let's fix them while they're in the jail. I think that's one of the main things that I wanted to fix. And also, there's a lot of mental health issues out here also. So mental health is a stigma in the Black community, and just want to make sure people know it's okay to get fixed if you have mental health problems and identify them and, you know, work on these problems.
Affordable housing has also come up a lot this election cycle. What is your perspective on that?
I used to own a bunch of rental property, which I sold a lot. But also, I was a commissioner on the Dane County Housing Authority. And so I looked at a lot of the things they do. I don't like stacking people all together. We put a lot of poor people together. Maybe we need to, you know, maybe mix them up. And then also, we need to have more affordable housing. So we need to find a way that we can move African-American people into housing and also increase the number of Black realtors, the number of Black appraisers, because I don't think we get a fair value when we go to appraising. And I don't even think we get a good look when we have realtors. So I think we need to help our Black realtors. And we need to put people in home ownership. You know, I know there's a big push to put them in apartments, but I think we need to push more home ownership programs. And I think we could do that. The county could. They got a lot of vacant land. Just in my district, there's a big lot of vacant land that at one time I was on the county board, and Kathleen Fault was interested in building an inpatient treatment facility at the end of Badger Road. Maybe we can use that and build townhouses and put African-Americans and people of color in housing so they can build equity, so they can build work.
Meanwhile, Dane County Executive Joe Parisi's retirement is around the corner. What are your thoughts on that race? And if elected to the county board, how would you handle that transition?
So I got endorsed by Joe Parisi. He endorsed me as a candidate. I have a lot of respect for Joe. It's going to be some real tough seats to fill. I'm staying out. I'm not going to endorse anybody in that race. Nobody has proven to me that they would be good at it yet. But I think it's going to be a tough transition. And that's why we need people like me that have strong fiscal background and been on the county board before and actually knows what's going on, instead of just putting somebody on the county board that don't have, you know, the background. So the new county exec is going to have a lot of support from the county board.
So before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, you know, I got over 30 years of financial experience. I was the first Black auditor to work for the Legislative Audit Bureau as a financial auditor. I was the business manager at Mendota. I was acting director of operations at Mendota. I'm ex-military, so I understand veteran services. I worked 5 years as a federal prison guard, so I understand the prisons and the jails. My background is just ideal and put together just for this position. I think I can add a lot to the county board, and I will if elected.
Thank you again for agreeing to speak with me, Richard.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
That was Richard Brown Sr., one of two candidates vying for the District 4 seat on the Dane County Board. District 4 represents Madison's south side.
We'll now hear from the second candidate running for the District 4 seat on the Dane County Board, incumbent supervisor Matt Veldren. He shared his priorities with WRT news producer Faye Parks earlier today.
Thank you for joining me, Matt.
Absolutely.
So to start, can you tell us a bit about yourself? What are some of your accomplishments since being elected to the county board?
There's a few things that I'm really proud of. I've been the chair of the Public Works Committee, Oversight Committee. I've been on the Human Services Oversight Committee. And right now I'm on the Personnel and Finance Committee. A couple of things that really have stood out is some of the stands I've taken as well, because one of the reasons I ran was sometimes people have specific issues that mine was more of the representation that the district was having at the time, and it was just the opposite of everything that I believed in. And then what I found out is a lot of the neighbors and people in the district believed in at the time. So that was my first really accomplishment in the sense of defeating a conservative who had been on the board, kind of a firebrand. Next, one of the things early on was a lot of the work we did with then Sheriff Mahoney with diverting folks from the jail and instituting electronic monitoring because of the time folks were being transferred to other counties because of overcrowding. And one thing Sheriff Mahoney instituted and I backed him was more folks on electronic monitoring so they could basically stay home until they needed to come to their appointments or into court for a hearing. One of the other things early on was our expansion into Section 8 housing, having landlords accepting that. And what we really found out, after folks saying it was not a great idea, was that a lot of the landlords actually liked it because it guaranteed funds. And then we also found out that a large portion of folks that are actually on Section 8 housing, which is the vouchers people get from the federal government for renting, was actually used by elderly. It was kind of interesting. Along those lines, and I focused a lot on youth, especially early in my early terms. And one thing that I was able to do was also add two neighborhood intervention personnel, the NIP, which is the Neighborhood Intervention Program, and that intervenes with a lot of youth in high school, a little bit into middle school, about keeping them if they're having issues, sometimes gang-related, sometimes threats, and just sort of going on the wrong path, and then really giving them a focus to stay in school and work. So and to increase people in that area was really one of the things that I'm really proud of as well. And now I have been the chair of the Specialized Transit Commission, and that works with elderly or supports transportation for elderly people on Medicaid for the most part to get around. We work with Madison Metro, but also outside of Madison. We're also working with a lot of our shared ride partners, and trying to expand that is a challenge, but we've been able to meet that. And because those are, that's sort of the bubble of baby boomers who are now, have retired already and continue to. So that is sort of the next area. I think that's very important for Dane County to keep in front of us.
Looking ahead to next week, if you are reelected to the county board, what will be some things you'd like to continue or prioritize moving forward?
The one thing I just sort of mentioned was emphasis on senior areas, trying to promote a little more regional transportation. Obviously, that's difficult given the circumstances we have with the state about not allowing a regional transit authority. So working more with the city when we can, and that becomes more of a Madison priority or a concern with other neighborhoods. They've expanded into Sun Prairie and Fitchburg, and I believe Monona is starting to come on. But expand that or expand ways for folks to get around, because there's areas of the neighborhood centers that they can go to, senior centers that they can go to, but and make sure that people are not reclusive, basically, in their homes. Because it's one thing to be in Madison, but when you're out in the more rural parts of Dane County, it can be very difficult.
Meanwhile, Dane County Executive Joe Parisi's retirement is around the corner. What are your thoughts on that race? And if reelected to the county board, which is likely to look different after this next election, how do you plan to handle the overall transition period?
Well, I think we've gone through a couple of transitions of large turnover. The last one was big, 2020, I think was really hard because of the pandemic and meeting completely remotely for 2 years was kind of tough to really move the needle, so to speak, on a lot of areas, because I don't think you ever got a real feel for folks on your committee. And then there's a couple of people that I don't think I physically ever met because we were, like I said, we were remote the whole time. So I'm kind of used to that. I think the last class came in and really sort of shook a lot of things up. Things that we were already doing in terms of racial diversity and looking at issues differently. A lot of the issues surrounding the jail and mental health obviously is important, and we've seen it all over society and the country. And so there's nothing just specific to Dane County or Madison. So I think the board will probably still lean that way, given who comes in. So it's just working with people with different backgrounds and getting them to work together. Is important. For Joe Parisi, he's done some great things. We haven't always had the greatest relationship as a body with him, but we've worked together well, and we've gotten a lot of things accomplished.
So before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I've represented my district 4 now, which is different, and that's actually one good thing about having to run competitive race, really digging in. You might knock on a couple of doors here and there, but really getting to know some of the other folks and having a district originally all on the western side of Verona Road and now being on both sides of Verona Road. And I actually was my first couple of terms. I had a piece of Fitchburg over by the Allied area, but I didn't have Allied Drive. Now I have Allied Drive and not the Fitchburg areas. And then just, folks in the Arbor Hills and then down at Dunn's Marsh and then some areas around Park Street, just having a more diverse district gives me a better sense of who it is. I mean, I live in the Meadowood neighborhood, and there's some issues we've worked hard on over there, and I think we've turned the corner a long time ago, but things flare up. But I think really those are the things that keep me wanting to do this job and be reelected for the folks of District 4.
Thank you again for agreeing to speak with me, Matt.
Absolutely.
That was incumbent supervisor Matt Veldrin, one of two candidates vying for the District 4 seat on the Dane County Board. District 4 represents Madison's south side. We heard from his challenger, Richard Brown Sr., earlier in the show. Brown and Veldrin will face off on April 2nd.
It's now 6:49 p.m. and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. On this edition of Wildlife Weekly, feature contributor Jackie Sandberg has the scoop on a new admission at the Rehabilitation Center, a 13-lined ground squirrel, which is often called a gopher in Minnesota.
Welcome to Wildlife Weekly. My name is Jackie Sandberg, and I'm the Wildlife Program Manager for the Dane County Humane Society here in Madison, Wisconsin. Each week, we choose a topic related to wildlife rehabilitation or the environment, and today I wanted to talk about our very adorable 13-lined ground squirrel that was admitted to the Wildlife Center just a couple of weeks ago here. And 13-lined ground squirrels are not a species that we see a ton of, except usually it's in the baby season. So when we get an adult in, it's actually, you know, fairly uncommon. And when I say that, we might only see about 10 to 15 adults every year that come in certain conditions, where most often we see little young ones displaced from their burrows or their nests during the spring and summer season. So it's always really fun when we get an adult in, although we were really sad this adult came in emaciated, meaning that it was starving. It is probably one of the skinniest little 13-lined ground squirrels I've ever seen. Poor little animal, you know, gosh, when I see their condition and they're so, so skinny and dehydrated and sad, it makes me just think about how much they have to go through living out in the wild all by themselves. And yes, animals are probably adapted, and I'm being a little, you know, sappy here, but they're adapted for living in Wisconsin, but, you know, they go through so much. We have our wonderful houses and heat and air conditioning, and they are subject to climate changes and weather patterns and everything else, even though they have wonderful burrows that they do make. So I feel for this little ground squirrel, and maybe they're one of my favorite rodent-type mammals because of the way that they sound. They actually make this adorable, really cool trill. So if you've never heard a 13-lined ground squirrel, definitely look up some videos about how it sounds. It's kind of like a downward pattern, like do-do-do-do-do-do-do sound, and it's so sweet. It's very melodic and kind of beautiful. They're similar in way of their vocalizing to prairie dogs would be, and they are also known as gophers, by the way. So when I say 13-lined ground squirrel, most people probably think I'm talking about the gopher. The gopher is in your yard that, yes, most people don't like because you see holes in every spot in your short grass lawns and you're probably trying to get rid of them. However, we would argue that they are definitely important for the environment and that we should definitely encourage some sharing of space and tolerance of these little mammals. They do actually some great good for the world, not just thinking about how they make potholes in your backyard. So let's talk a little bit about them. Again, they're called gophers or 13-lined ground squirrels, and they are 13-lined on purpose. That's what their name is, because they have 13 alternating brown and white long stripes that go fully down the body. And they also have spots in between on the brown spots, meaning the brown stripes have white spots, and then it alternates with the white striping. And it is actually really beautiful, especially to see up close. So they're similar looking to chipmunks, but I would say they're more elongated and they don't have as fluffy as the tail end as a chipmunk does. Chipmunks are going to also be that brownish reddish color, but they only have the white stripe bordered down the back side of them. So it's like right above where the leg or the knee is. And then they'll have the white stripe above and below the eyes. So that's how you can kind of tell the difference. The 13-lined ground squirrel has all of those stripes with spots on their back, and then their eye has a white eye ring around it. So not really seeing much of striping. We also will see them in similar habitats, but I would say that 13-lined ground squirrels are found in nice, wide open kind of prairie and lawn spaces. So they do typically habit golf courses and large open parks and things, even in some urban-ish areas. They are a really cool mammal because they are strictly diurnal, meaning that they only are out during the daytime. They are going to be outside more when it's really warm. And otherwise, they kind of live by themselves, either solitary or in a small group. They're called a colonial hibernator. And otherwise, they're quite aggressive with each other. So they do, I don't want to say hibernate, because they do sort of hibernate, but actually it's more of a torpor. So this is the time of year where they're just waking up as it's getting warm here, where they're sitting in their burrows that they have extensively made. It's actually really cool to see. Their burrows are meant to have different chambers in them, and they can be 15 to 20 feet long, but usually they'll stay within the first 1 to 2 feet of the surface area. And then they have deeper areas where they have like their nest, and sometimes they'll have other hiding places. And so it's pretty extensive, and they can usually stay within about a 2 to 3 acre range. But in the wintertime, they're going to be staying in those chambers, and they're just kind of going to sleep a little bit. So torpor is not really a true hibernation, but it's more of a time where they are very, very slow. They're sitting and they are trying not to use as much energy as possible. And what's really cool, and you can definitely look up some of these facts even on, you know, Wikipedia about 13 line ground squirrels, but they redistribute their sodium, glucose, and their urea and nitrogen into different body compartments during the time when they're in this sort of semi-transmatic state. It's really, really cool. And they also will increase some antioxidants in their muscles to help protect any damage while they are sitting in this state. They are stored, you know, fat reserves through the late summer into early fall, and that's how they're able to use, you know, energy at all to be able to survive. And so they use that instead of glycogen, which is kind of your normal when you're eating. That's what's keeping us active. So using those fat stores are really important. They will also use skeletal muscle, which is tough, and that's why we probably see this 13 line ground squirrel so skinny and small, is because he used up all of his fat reserves and a lot of his muscle reserves. So, you know, the person that found him, kudos, and glad that this little guy came out of his burrow at a time where we were able to, you know, get him to a rehab center to help him get those energy components back. But I'm sure it happens more often than just this single adult. It's a hard life. Otherwise, when they're in good health, they'll be eating lots of grass and seeds, but they also eat a lot of insect matter. So caterpillars, grasshoppers, crickets, they even will eat mice and shrews, which is kind of surprising, but they will attack other animals sometimes. We also have known to see them have eggs sometimes, and cicadas this year are going to be big, and that is one that they eat and sometimes catch. So that's a pretty cool thing that I think maybe they'll use as a food source maybe in this coming year when we have more of the cicadas waking up. So that's a little bit about our 13 line ground squirrels. They are all here in Wisconsin. We see them fairly, you know, regularly in our area, just not as many times into rehabilitation. So really neat animal. I encourage people to look up a little bit more information about them and appreciate them for what they are. And know that DCHS, the Humane Society here, is able to work with them, especially the adults. We work with pretty much any adult native mammal to Wisconsin, except for deer and raccoons. So give us a call if you ever find one or have an animal that's in critical need of help. Our number is 608-287-3235. Thanks for listening today here on WORT. This has been Wildlife Weekly.
And that does it for our show. Thanks for listening to WORT's Live Local News at 6. Your headline writer this evening was John Klein Wilson.
Special thanks to feature contributors Jackie Sandberg and Greg Michaud.
Super Dave Lawrenson engineered the show.
Faye Parks produced this newscast.
And Shelly Pittman is the news director at WORT. I'm your host, Sarah Hopeful. Stay up to date with the WORT Local News podcast and subscribe wherever else you keep up with podcasts.
And I'm your host, Christian Knutson. Up next is Spanish Language News with Luis Rapatio. Good night.